From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The 45th President of the United States has taken office on the west front of the Capitol under cloudy Washington skies. Donald Trump placed his hand on two Bibles, one of them Abraham Lincoln's, and took the oath.
And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Yeah! And then he spoke a blunt, hard inaugural address. Nationalist, protectionist, isolationist, promising to put America first above all else. Derisive of the Washington establishment gathered around him on the Capitol steps. An inaugural address like none in memory and maybe longer, maybe ever. Tonight on Point, we are live and looking at Donald Trump's Inauguration Day, his inauguration message. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What did you hear today? Did you recognize the country Donald Trump described? Is it yours? And where do you hope or fear this president will take the nation? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And remember, we are live tonight for Inauguration Day and open right now for your calls. Or join us online at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We've got a great panel with us tonight from around the country. With us from Washington, John McCormick, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. John, welcome back to On Point. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thanks for having me.
With us from Mobile, Alabama, is Cynthia Tucker, Pulitzer Prize-winning political columnist in her time at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Cynthia Tucker, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
And with us from Chicago, Paul Lisnick, political analyst for Chicago's WGN News, host of Politics Tonight on Chicago's CLTV. Paul, the last time I saw you was live in Chicago a couple of months ago. We're very happy to have you with us this evening.
And Tom, I appreciate your inviting me back. Looking forward to it.
Great to have you all here. John McCormick, you're with the Weekly Standard, kind of a conservative outfit. What did you hear in Donald Trump's speech today?
I heard what you heard. I heard a populist speech, a nationalist speech, a speech in which he put America first, America first. He said it twice. What I didn't hear was a conservative speech or a traditionally conservative speech in the American sense, one that would be rooted in the Declaration of Independence, and the idea that all men are created equal, endowed with certain inalienable rights, a life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What we heard was more of a conservatism, if you could call it that, blood and soil conservatism of Europe. We didn't hear any talk about liberty or barely any talk about freedom or limited government or the Constitution. There was also a rejection of the conservative free market idea that a rising tide lifts all boats. Donald Trump very clearly embraces an economic nationalist belief that economics is a zero sum game, and that if our trading partners are gaining, then we must be losing. So it was a very very unusual speech. I don't think we quite heard anything like it in at least a couple centuries.
Donald Trump was very happy to say this is something different going on here. Here he was early on talking about the meaning of today's ceremony. He said it was special.
Today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
Paul Lisnick in Chicago, this was a populist speech as Donald Trump ran a populist campaign. There was no question about that.
Indeed, Tom. In fact, if you had never heard Donald Trump speak before, and this was the first time you heard him, you essentially heard what he's been saying all through the campaign, done in just a bit of a loftier way. To me, this was one of the darkest inaugural speeches we've ever heard. I mean that in terms of tone and message. He talked about crime and drugs, and not typically the kind of message you get in an inaugural speech, but we got it from him today. Usually messages are about hope and ask not what your country can do for you, those kinds of things. Essentially today, President Trump looked at at Congress and said, your day is over. The people are taking control, except he's got to work with those members of Congress on legislation. We'll see what direction he can go.
He said Americans wanted simple things and they deserved them.
Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are just and reasonable demands of righteous people and a righteous public.
Cynthia Tucker, the people want good schools, great schools. They want safe neighborhoods. They want good jobs. That sounds like a pretty reasonable menu.
It is a reasonable menu, but I don't think that Donald Trump was speaking about a country that I recognize. In fact, I think that many Americans would say that they have much of that already. He was speaking to a pretty narrow group of Americans with that message, the people who elected him. He talked about public schools that are awash in cash. I don't recognize those schools, although I think most Americans are satisfied with their public schools. He talked about carnage. I wondered if he had been, if he has ever been in a racially diverse urban core. I lived in the so-called inner city in Atlanta for 20 years in a thriving, racially diverse neighborhood full of middle-class and upper-middle-class people. Most urban cores around the country are revitalizing. Crime is down in most cities. So when he talked about giving the country back to people who have been forgotten, I think he was talking about a very narrow group of people, white, working class Americans who believe that their country has been taken away from them.
And yet you know, Cynthia, the numbers that since, what, 1980, incomes have scarcely risen for many, many Americans and not just a narrow slice.
That it is absolutely true that while the nation as a whole has gotten wealthier, we have a huge problem with income inequality. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But in 2015, median household income rose by more than 5%. It probably rose again last year, although the numbers aren't in yet. The unemployment rate is less than 5%. Have we tackled income inequality? No, we haven't. But I didn't, again, I didn't recognize the bleak America that Donald Trump was talking about.
Paul Lisnick, you're in Chicago, where murder rates have been terrible in recent years, and the number, just as last year, higher than ever. I want to play the rather long clip where he talked about carnage, American carnage, and get your response. Here was Donald Trump saying, for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists.
Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation, an education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge, and the crime and the gangs and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Donald Trump, President Trump, talking in his inaugural address today about American carnage. This is a kind of language I've never heard from that spot, Paul Lisnick, about this country. But there you are in Chicago, where the murder rate has been terrible. What were you thinking as he laid out that litany of whoa, carnage?
Well, I was thinking a few things. Number one, not the kind of speech I expect to hear in an inaugural address. Number two, I'm going to agree with Cynthia. I wondered what America he was talking about. He was living in a world certainly of stereotypes. There is a problem of violence in Chicago. There's no question about that. And in fact, our mayor, Rahm Emanuel, has said to now President Trump, we'll be happy to take federal funding to assist us in education programs and job creation programs and those kinds of things. But it seems as though the president believes somehow this is a law and order issue. We need cops to be doing something different, and perhaps that's a piece of the puzzle, but I think it's a misread of the city, and I'm not so sure it was an appropriate comment to make at the level of an inaugural address.
John McCormick, if our Chicago man doesn't buy the American carnage description, where does it apply? What's Mr. Trump, President Trump, talking about?
I think that would be an exaggeration. I think, you know, in terms of the economy, I think that if you look, it's mostly been a problem of stagnation over the past decade. It's not deprivation. And that was the picture he painted. It was this, you know, bleak wasteland with rusted out factories scattered like tombstones. So I do think that was an exaggeration. He also exaggerates, too, and he sort of blames all the problems ultimately come back to this, you know, tiny cabal of, the Washington ruling class, or he didn't really say this exactly, but you get this sense that, you know, multinational corporations that are stealing jobs from the hardworking American worker. And, you know, there's reasonable debate to be had about, the size and scope of government, and that the ruling class has implemented bad policies that have hurt the middle class, or that, you know, our trade policy should be different. Our immigration levels might be a little too big, and they're stacking the deck against people in the working class, against people who are carpenters or people who, you know, work with their hands and are not, and working in San Francisco or Washington, D.C. or Manhattan. But I do think it is a real problem to, you know, blame all of our problems in some sort of small group. I would even say that President Obama did that, not in his inaugural addresses, but when he blamed, you know, fat cat bankers on Wall Street for our economic problems, and said that, you know, we need to if we could only focus on nation building at home, we would be able to take care of all of our economic problems. You know, the economy is a complex thing. And the idea that if you can just it's a typical trope in Democratic politics to blame all of our problems on a small group of people. But
we did have a banking crisis when President Obama came to power.
We certainly did. And we certainly have a problem of a ruling class in Washington, D.C. that is out of touch. I just said, again, it's a problem of exaggeration. And I think, again, I wish I had heard more about personal responsibility. The idea that, you know, we hold our destiny in our own hands, and that there are moral problems that we all have in a society, and we need to build up our families. And that's not something that we're going to be able to fix from the government.
Donald Trump not fitting into any box today in his inaugural address in Washington, D.C. The Missouri State University Chorale behind us here right now singing at the inaugural service this morning. John McCormick with the Weekly Standard. Cynthia Tucker, formerly of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Paul Lisnek in Chicago at WGN News. Please stand by. Listeners, you can join us. What did you think of Donald Trump's message today, inauguration today? Are you on board? Are you in opposition? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We're live. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Keep faith. Keep watch. Take heart. Take courage. Take heart.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking tonight live about Donald Trump's big inauguration day and the new U.S. president's message to the country and the world, America First. Very loud and clear today in Washington, everybody heard it. Paul Lisnek is with us from WGN News and Politics Tonight on Chicago CLTV from Chicago. From Mobile, Alabama tonight, Cynthia Tucker joins us, Pulitzer Prize-winning political columnist. From the Weekly Standard in Washington, senior writer John McCormick is with us. And you can join us as well. What did you think of Donald Trump's message today, Inauguration Day? Are you on board? Are you in opposition? Do you see the America he described, an America of carnage? What do you make of his core theme, America First? 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. The parade was there, and Donald Trump was there. Crowds not as big as we have seen at some inaugurations past, but enthusiastic when the president and the now First Lady Melania Trump got out of their armored car here, courtesy of CNN. Protesters in town, too. Here's some chanting along Indiana Avenue, recorded by CNN reporter Greg Krieg. Celebration and protest all underway today in Washington. With us right now from the Capitol is Roxanne Roberts, style reporter for The Washington Post. She's keeping an eye on the Inauguration Day party scene tonight. We'll come to your calls in just a moment, but we want to hear about this. Roxanne, what's the profile of the Trump Inaugural Day celebrations this evening?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Good, good. Well, the official profile is, for to the degree it's bipartisan, is We are celebrating our country. We're celebrating a peaceful transfer of power. That's how we do things. We disagree, but at least on this day, we come together and respect the process.
Is the president dancing yet? Is he out with Melania? What are the balls? Where?
They're not at the balls yet. They're going to go to 3 official balls, 2 at the Washington Convention Center, where the Presidential Inaugural Committee were estimating 30,000 people. The press is not allowed in those balls, so I'm not going to be able to tell you whether or not they actually got those numbers. And then there's one other ball that is much smaller, about 2,500 people, honoring the military and first responders.
And who's performing tonight? Have they put together? I remember Beyonce is singing, you know, for the President Obama and Michelle Obama. Who will be singing, I don't know, for the president and Melania?
No big names. Even though I think there's going to be a Roquette sighting at some point. There was some controversy about them, and we haven't seen them yet. I think they're going to show up at one of these balls. I'm more interested in seeing Donald Trump try to dance to My Way, which is apparently the song he's selected to dance, known as a great beat.
No. And what about the mood in the Capitol, Roxanne? You've been to many inaugurations. How's it compare with inaugurations past?
Well, what's different this time is, and I've always said, you know, the winners celebrate and the losers stay home. And the difference is that a lot of people who are unhappy about the election of Donald Trump have come to Washington. They were in the streets today. There should be a much larger protest tomorrow, I think, hopefully a more peaceful protest on the Mall. They're expecting more than 100,000 people. So I would say the mood is more mixed. I think officially the mood is we're going to take a deep breath and we're going to see what happens, because nobody really knows exactly what to expect. Usually Republicans are tap dancing, and they're not, because I don't think they really know to what degree Donald Trump is a conservative, to what degree he's a New York progressive, and what his policies are going to mean for their agendas.
And in many ways, he took them to task right alongside Democrats today as he stood there at the inaugural podium.
That was I guess the polite term would be sort of, you know, taking them to the woodshed. You know, they're all sitting there, and he basically said, you all have done a terrible job, and I'm taking back Washington. And he was more gracious in his speech to the congressional leaders after the swearing in, but it was still pretty harsh. If you were one of the guys that was involved in policy for the last 4 or 8 years on either side of the aisle, you couldn't have been thrilled with that speech.
Roxanne Roberts, watching all the parties tonight, the balls in Washington, style reporter for The Washington Post. Roxanne, thanks for joining us for a minute.
You're more than welcome.
It was tough. It was harsh. If you were part of the political elite, Donald Trump might call them sitting there at the side of the Capitol today. If you were listening from around the world, it might have sounded a little harsh as well. Donald Trump says there's a new decree going out in Trump's Washington.
We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Cynthia Tucker, Paul Lisnick, John McCormick, please stand by. They're in Washington and Chicago and Mobile, Alabama. I want to get to our callers from around the country. Let's start just up the pike in Vermont, Burlington, Vermont. Peter's calling. Peter, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. So I definitely don't identify with Trump's America that he's painting. I don't see it in my community. You know, when he says America first, it's really hard to believe when he's, appointing people like Ben Carson, who, you know, can't say one way or another housing development is not going to impact Trump, or Nancy DeVos, who can't say guns shouldn't be near school.
Betsy, yeah.
He says, you know, America needs to go back to the people. Well, he bombarded CNN by saying no one cares about their tax returns. And you go on Twitter, everyone wants to know the tax returns. It's just crooked lies.
Crooked lies? You're not smiling on this inauguration night. I appreciate your call, though. Let's get another Peter from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Peter in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, I'm calling to say I am for Trump, and I'm very excited today.
And exactly why, Peter? What was it in his message or his presentation, his profile there that gets you going?
Well, you know, today he talked about the forgotten man. And for me, when I listen to the media as a conservative Catholic, I feel like the forgotten man. In fact, some people voted for Trump because they were voting against Hillary. I was kind of voting against the media, nothing personal against you, of course. But I wanted this. I think the media needs a wake-up call that there are other people in this country who think differently than they do.
So what has, as a conservative Catholic, what's offended you in recent years that you hope Trump will turn around?
Well, I would say listening to the media and not hearing anything that reflects my viewpoints. For example, I listen to a lot of public radio, and I hear LGBTQ stories every day, if not every hour. And I hear Catholic or Christian or conservative stories that reflect my viewpoint very rarely. And I'd say the same thing about the mainstream media. I mean, I think if nobody at WBUR Boston voted for Trump, you have to ask yourself, how can you be remembering the forgotten man like me?
I don't know that that's the case, but do you want LGBTQ rights put on the back burner or stripped away?
No. I don't. I think when you talk about remembering the forgotten man, you don't. It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game where you forget everybody else.
It's interesting. Peter, I appreciate your call from Milwaukee. Paul Lisnick, you're just down the road there in Chicago. Can everybody be remembered here? Do we have to forget anybody in this country?
Well, you know, I found Peter's comments really interesting because, you know, he's concerned. Why aren't we hearing stories about, you know, the Catholic whatever man? I'm not sure that they're under fire the way LGBTQ community has been. And let me say this, in case people are wondering, your other kind of comments, wondering what is Trump's agenda. While he was giving his inaugural, shortly thereafter, I went onto the WhiteHouse.gov site, which, of course, is now taken over by the Trump administration, removed from the section on current important issues, LGBTQ rights, climate control, immigration. Put up on that issue site, ISIS. Now, I'm not objecting to the fact that ISIS is a critical issue for him. It is. I get it. But the fact that he has removed the other issues that I just talked about
climate
raises a question. LGBTQ rights,
yep,
gone. Immigration reform, gone. So there's a message about your agenda coming. And as far as Peter's comments briefly about the media, and I get that the media is not popular. Trump has made it a real thing to have everybody, you know, hate the media. But I got to tell you, as they make efforts now to move the media out of the White House and over to the old executive office building where they don't have access to staff and you lose that opportunity, which the media creates, which is to keep tabs on an administration and keep them honest to the extent they can, that's going to be something that the people in general are going to come to regret.
Kim in Boston. Kim, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What do you see? What do you hear?
Hi, Tom. I believe that the carnage that Donald Trump speaks about is actually in his own mind. The man can't form a coherent sentence that's not prepared. He's ignorant to think that any isolationist policy in today's global economy will work. He's not done anything to ever help the little guy. In fact, there's plenty of evidence that he hires people and doesn't pay them. I'm afraid I can't sleep at night. I'm afraid of his lack of of acknowledgement of women's rights and those heroes we hold high in our society who have upheld those of civil rights. And him denigrating those people just leaves me trembling and scared to death.
Appreciate your call, Kim. Cynthia Tucker there in Mobile, Alabama. Kim doesn't like it at all. She ends to stay scared. But Peter in Milwaukee says, look, don't forget me. I hear these other issues, but don't forget me. You say it's a narrow slice or just the slice that supported Donald Trump, but it was enough people to elect him president, Cynthia.
Yes, but it wasn't a majority of the voters, actually. Hillary Clinton got more votes than he did. But let's set that aside for a moment.
Okay.
The simple fact of the matter is that the forgotten man is unlikely to get out of the Trump presidency what he expects. Look who Trump is nominating for his cabinet post. Wealthy financiers from Wall Street, billionaires, the person he has nominated to be Secretary of Labor doesn't believe that the minimum wage should be increased. So even as Trump speaks about remembering the forgotten man, the policies he's actually likely to advocate are much more likely to exacerbate income inequality than to do anything for the economics of the forgotten man.
I mean, that's not the message that he delivered today. He said he's going to do everything for American workers and American families. And with this America First theme above all, here he was, kind of a protectionist tone.
Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs.
John McCormick in Washington, this is so far from Republican orthodoxy for generations now. It makes the head spin. Will that bring back the jobs that Donald Trump is promising?
Well, it's not clear exactly how far he's going to go. As a free market conservative, I definitely believe if this is taken too far, it could plunge our economy into a recession, if not a depression. On the other hand, I do think that, like I said earlier, there is a reasonable room for debate on what the proper our trade deals are. I mean, I think if Trump does things like these little deals with Carrier for 700 jobs,
yeah,
that's not exactly going to be a massive thing. It's more window dressing. So I do think that if it's not taken too far, it won't exactly have that much of an impact, but it definitely could be taken too far and really do a lot of harm. But Trump's common message is, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to protect you. And to the caller's question earlier, Peter from Milwaukee, that's what a lot of conservatives who didn't like Trump, didn't like his morals, didn't like how he's lived his life or his character, they voted because of the Supreme Court. That was one of the exit poll questions who people were asked if that was one of the most important issues. And those people broke for Trump because they thought, hey, our backs are up against the wall. There's this lawsuit with the Little Sisters of the Poor, their religious liberties being threatened, other people's religious liberties being threatened. Hillary Clinton campaigned openly on a plan of Medicaid taxpayer-funded abortion for the first time. And so what you saw was that white Catholic voters who made up a lot of that, who probably swung the election in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, Democrats did the worst among them in living memory.
It worked politically. How will it work when he's in the White House? Donald in Arizona, Yuma, Arizona. Donald, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I'm a high school teacher. I live in the highest unemployment in the United States, and I work in the second highest unemployment in the United States, Yuma and El Centro.
Okay.
It's hard for me to tell my students. I'm white. All of my students, 99% of them, are Hispanic. It's hard for me to look them in the eye today and say, there's great hope for you kids because the person in charge does not like your culture, your families, your people you've brought across here. And how is Donald Trump going to tell people like my students in this town who have been agricultural communities for all of these decades that they're going to bring some type of factory job here? Those don't exist here. These factory jobs that he's dreaming about. My parents both worked for Hyster Lift Truck Company back in the Midwest. Those factory jobs are gone. That's all done by automation. So he's living in a dreamland. So when he's talking about our education system, what are we training our children to do? We don't train them to weld anymore. Those jobs are automated. So I honestly don't think he has been down in the trenches with teachers, with students, and understand what they go through every day.
But what would work in your neck of the woods, Don? What would work where you are, Donald?
You know what? I teach computers, and more of our country, we're moving more and more into automation. We're moving more into computer control. Everything that we have in our home is computer automated. There are millions of jobs to be created in that, and yet we're not catching up with our school systems in those technologies. We're still teaching the same basics. And until our education system changes to those technologies, we can't hope for, like, the lady is going to become Secretary of Education.
Yeah.
Voucher systems aren't going to change that.
Well, I mean, he didn't say he didn't want to educate people for jobs that are there, but he has made much of bringing back factory jobs. Paul Lisnick, you're in Chicago in the what's come to be called the Rust Belt. He talked about old shuttered factories like tombstones. Do you see him bringing manufacturing jobs back to your region of the country, Paul?
Well, thus far, Tom, the way he's bringing back those jobs is company by company, Carrier in Indiana and Steps. Except what we're learning about some of those companies that have agreed to come back, the plans for these companies have been in the works for several years now. So, but of course, getting on the Trump bandwagon because it's a smart thing to do. No, the jobs are going to come through a change in trade policy, which he's, you know, taking a close watch over. I think he thinks these things are just going to happen. We're going to see how.
Paul Lisnick, please stand by. Cynthia Tucker in Mobile, Alabama. John McCormick in Washington, D.C. Of course, Carrier saying it's going to use a bunch of that money to automate its manufacturing there. We're looking at Donald Trump's big inauguration day. Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What did you make of his message? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, Stars and Stripes Forever, the Marine Band today, inauguration day. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight live about Donald Trump's big inauguration day and the new U.S. president's message to the country and the world, America First. You can join us tonight. Does it matter to you that Donald Trump is not a soaring speaker, that he's blunt? Does his bluntness point in the right direction? And if this is his vision, what will follow? At home, abroad, how do you see what's coming? Was the blunt message today bigger than the rituals in a good way, not a good way? And where will this man take the country? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK with Cynthia Tucker, Pulitzer Prize-winning political columnist. She joins us from Mobile, Alabama. Paul Lisnick is here, political analyst at Chicago's WGN News, with us from Chicago tonight. John McCormick is here, senior writer at the Conservative Weekly Standard in Washington, and we'd be happy to hear from you as well, 800-423-8255. Donald Trump, very nationalist today in his speech. And said that loyalty to country should pull us together. Here he was.
At the bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. And through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice.
And then this long segment, but this is where he talked about the hour of action arriving.
Do not allow anyone to tell you that it cannot be done. No challenge can match the heart and fight and spirit of America. We will not fail. Our country will thrive and prosper again. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots.
The red blood of patriots from the inaugural podium today. Cameron in Corona, California. Thank you very much for calling, Cameron. You're on the air.
Yeah, and thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. I completely understand that Obama is a more eloquent speaker than Trump, but that's one of the reasons I voted for him. And I know I'm a minority in the state, but I think this is what we need. I think we need a businessman in office, and I'm excited about the future of that, and I'll take my response off air.
Cameron, we'll take it right there and get another from California. I appreciate your call. Risa in Menifee, California. Risa, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I think his message was heal our divisions is what I think he concentrated on, and our loyalty to each other, and there's no room for prejudice. I think it was very inspirational. And I must say I'm very upset with the senators and congressmen that did not attend, claiming that if they could do that as their right as individual American citizens. Guess what? They have constituents to represent. And whether I voted for Trump or not, because originally I was a Bernie votee, and I did switch to Trump. But I want you to know, whether I voted for Trump or not, they needed to be there to support our president.
What if they felt? What if they felt they needed to protest, and their constituents wanted them to protest, Risa?
Did they take that vote? Did they get a majority to do that? Because I didn't get a letter saying, "What do you feel about this?"
Well, they can all see the vote in their towns. They can all, I mean, they all can all talk to their constituents. Don't they have a right to stay away if they want to?
Not if they're representing something other than themselves. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I really don't care who voted for whom. As a Democrat, I'm assuming they voted for Hillary. But they have an obligation, just as Trump said, to heal our divisions. And they're not starting on that track. We've had enough division already, and that's why nothing's been done in government.
Risa, I appreciate your call from Menifee, California. Cynthia Tucker, did you hear a unifying message in Donald Trump's inaugural address today?
Absolutely not. It was divisive, bombastic, even belligerent.
But he said, it's in our loyalty to our country. We rediscover our loyalty to each other. Open your heart to patriotism. There's no room for prejudice.
And that probably contained the loftiest rhetoric of the entire speech. But I have to tell you, I think that he and his supporters may mean something different when they use the word patriotism than I and many progressives mean. I happen to think that dissent is one of the highest forms of patriotism. I think that peaceful protest marches are definitely a form of patriotism. And as for the representatives who did not show up today, I want to say, first of all, I'm very glad that there was many former presidents on the podium as they were. I think that's important about
Jimmy Carter,
American
Bill
democracy.
Clinton, George W. Bush, all there. And, of course, Barack Obama.
Exactly. But it's also true that many Republican representatives didn't attend Obama's inauguration either. And that's just fine. In this country, we, so far anyway, have respected dissent.
Yeah, we have. Dan in Youngstown, Ohio. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to make a comment. I'm from Youngstown. I'm 59, born and raised a Catholic, a white guy. I understand. I get the economic stuff. I see where... I watched Youngstown fall apart, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to many of my friends who are the constituency of Donald Trump that put him in, you know, voted for him. And all policies aside, and I don't agree with his policies, I think we're on the right track. But when you look at the moral aspect of who he is, I have a hard time understanding how it supersedes. You know, he's a liar, he's a bigot, he's a racist. And I don't understand how they put all that aside and allow it to be more important than and cast their vote in that direction.
What about today when now President Trump, Dan, said, when you open your heart to patriotism, there's no room for prejudice. Does that ease your concern on that front or not?
No, it doesn't. First of all, I don't believe he's a patriot. I don't believe that he's a patriotic person. I don't think he understands. You know, in Youngstown at 60, my parents and all of those people were the ones that fought in the war and built the country, and they were true patriots. He criticizes John McCain. He criticizes the families of the fallen soldier and tweets and fights, and I don't believe he's a patriot at all. And I don't think you can go into a dictionary and change the definition of a bigot or things like that. I don't believe he's capable of change. And I think that's what we're stuck with. Somebody told me today, give him the benefit of the doubt, that there, in my opinion, is about who he is.
What about the industrial losses in your neck of the wood, in Youngstown?
I get that. Youngstown, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with what happened in Youngstown. And I saw it happen, and it's not a good thing. I get it. I understand that that people were left behind. I get that. But I think we were on the right track, and I can't figure out what the underlying reason is for voting for him. I can't figure out why somebody would go that direction when they understand his moral character. I mean, to mimic a person on national television that has a physical condition. And then we all saw it.
Yeah.
And then to deny it and say he didn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't get that. All those things are more important to me than even if he were able to do, you know, create more jobs, bring back manufacturing, things like that, whatever. But
morality first, you're saying, Dan, and we've got it. John McCormick, may I bring that to you? I mean, for a time, there were a lot of Republicans objecting to Donald Trump on kind of moral grounds, as you well know. What about now? He's president. And does that land of concern go away? Or if it's still there, how does it get manifested? How does it get applied?
Well, you know, I think it's definitely still there. And that's what's interesting about this, you know, the inaugural address. We're all talking about the ideology espoused and how it might differ from traditional conservatism. You know, that's I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I'm a conservative. I cast a protest vote for a third party candidate. And my reasons weren't ideological. I would have been happy to vote for someone who was, you know, a little more protectionist, you know, okay. A little more strict in immigration. For me, it was questions of character and temperament. And those concerns are still there. They haven't gone away. What I wrote in May, I believe in January. I hope I'm wrong. That's all I can do is I think that people who disagree with him can work to prove that they were hopefully wrong about him or to make the best out of a bad situation. I was actually very concerned. This is more of an ideological thing, but okay. Today, Mike Lee, a senator from Utah, he introduced a bill to reassert Congress's authority to – the president right now has the authority to raise tariffs basically on his own. Mm-hmm. And Mike Lee, a conservative Republican of Utah, says that he wants to take that power back to the Congress. So I do hope, you know, if there can be a renewal of congressional authority and reassertion of itself, you know, I think that could be promising. But at the end of the day, yeah, those are my biggest concerns is does Donald Trump's temperament get us into a war that we shouldn't get into or a conflict? You know, does he end up being such a poor example morally that he sort of degrades our culture and degrades conservatism, degrades the Republican Party, that he poisons the party, poisons the movement for a generation? Those are all my concerns. I sure hope I'm wrong.
Cornelius in California. Cornelius, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, so I did not vote for Donald Trump. I voted for Hillary Clinton. I'm an African-American male, 39 years old.
All right.
But one thing that I do like about what Donald Trump is saying is that the whole thing about the carnage in the inner cities. A caller called earlier about the forgotten man. Well, there are forgotten men and women in these inner cities that live in war zones. I mean, they're under the control of drug dealers and gang members. And they also should have a shot at the American dream.
And the new president called out to them specifically today. Is it persuasive to you, Cornelius, that he's got an answer to that problem?
I hope that he does have a real answer because no one has done anything before. I mean, some people, like Spike Lee, for instance, called for a state of emergency in Chicago. And with the crime rate being what it is and the solve rate being what it is, I think that it actually is. I mean, those people deserve a chance at the American dream, and they're not getting it living in those cities.
I appreciate your call, Cornelius. Paul Lisnick, we were with you in Chicago just a couple of months ago, and Arne Duncan, the former Obama education secretary, who's now trying to bring jobs into exactly those neighborhoods to try and deal with the real problems that are there. Are Donald Trump and Arne Duncan on the same page here, the new Republican president and the Democrat?
Well, probably not, given the fact that Arne Duncan was Secretary of Education and Betsy DeVos comes in, who has a very different view on life. Mm. You know, it's funny, when the last caller, when you asked what are the, you know, how is Donald Trump going to fix it? And the answer is, well, I sure hope he can.
Yep.
You know, the bottom line is, Trump has said, I'm going to be the greatest job-creating president God ever created. How? What are you doing? You're going to get such health care that you're not going to believe it. It's going to be the best health care and the cheapest prices. I'm glad. Where do I sign up for that? I mean, the bottom line is, with almost every one of the policies, and of course, you know, immigration, I don't know. Everybody better get ready to go based on his policies. And I don't think I'm exaggerating on any of this based on what he has said, based on what he says at the podium and in public speeches. So whether this changes now as this just got real, and when Paul Ryan and his Reince Priebus, his chief of staff, and Mitch McConnell, and everybody's at his side, Mike Pence, whether they're speaking truth to power, I don't know. I don't know what direction it goes in. But I do know, when we talked earlier about rights and the comments we made about the change in the agenda. Mike Pence is who I think his imprimatur is going to be very strong on legislation. He's far more conservative than Donald Trump ever thought of being. And so when you talk about restriction of rights, get ready for some of those. But it's probably going to be in the direction that President Obama opened up rights for various groups. It's just the direction things seem to be going.
John McCormick, what about the United States internationally? We only have a couple of minutes left here, but with this huge emphasis on America first and kind of exhorting other countries to follow the same example, you know, is the right of all nations to put their own interests first. The U.S. has been such a multilateralist for such a long time, since World War II and before. What's the turn that you see the American profile taking on the world stage under this president inaugurated today?
You know, that's a million-dollar question. I don't know. I think he's made it very clear that he believes, or he now at least believes, that things like the Iraq War was a mistake. He originally supported it. He now thinks that interventions, things like Libya, was a mistake. He originally supported that as well. So that's the general idea that he's given us. Then again, you know, George W. Bush talked about the idea of having more modest foreign policy. He was against nation building during the debates in 2000. Then 9/11 happened, and you know, we got the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq. In his second inaugural, he was talking about, you know, being a beacon of democracy all around the world. So events definitely change things. I think that we're going to be in for a lot of surprises. It remains a very dangerous world, and we don't know what's going to hit us next.
Cynthia, your hopes, your fears on this Inauguration Day evening?
Well, my fear about Donald Trump as commander-in-chief is that he is extremely naive on the world stage. It sounds good to say we're going to defend America's interest first. But the simple fact of the matter is there is no way to defeat ISIS, which is borderless, without alliances, strong alliances around the world. So if he starts tearing down our alliances, then we're going to be less safe than we are now. That's my fear.
Paul Lisnick, your hope, your fear tonight.
My concern is that Europe and a lot of elements of the world are very concerned about what policies this president is going to be pursuing, if not because it's an America First policy, because there is a general naivete about how the world works. And I think we are in for a rocky ride.
It is Donald Trump's White House tonight, President Donald Trump, on this Inauguration Day. And we're grateful to all three of you for being with us. Paul Lisnick with WGN News and CLTV in Chicago. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Cynthia Tucker, Pulitzer Prize-winning political columnist with us from Mobile, Alabama. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thanks for having me.
And John McCormick at the Weekly Standard. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, Tom.
The Mormon Tabernacle Choir today on Inauguration Day. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Brotherhood from sea.